Accession number 18837, reel 4.
John Stokes, reel 4.
Okay. So, obviously hadn't been any talk about the Far East. People didn't know about it. But this takes me right back to the days of the desert. And we used to get English newspapers come out to us, which were probably 6 months, 3 or 4 as old. And the first push up the desert, you know, which was really quite a victory, really, from, you know, us British troops sort of, we started it off, and then along came the Australians and the New Zealanders. And we had Indian troops with us, but they were mixed in with the British troops anyway. But the headlines in the English paper was Empire troops, victory in the desert. And this was talking about the 1940 victories of Sidi Barney, Bardi and whatever. And so there was always this sort of, we thought, we were sort of the poor relations, anyway. That was maybe a little bit of a chip on my shoulder. So there we had VE Day down in Kent, and then we went over to Europe. And we had a while in a big holding camp at Bruges, and eventually we were allocated to units. Now the situation was quite ridiculous. I was in a camp in Bruges, and there were so many what I call senior ranks, sergeants and sergeant majors, whereas in an ordinary company of troops it would be private soldiers, the sergeants were in other ranks. And the supernumeraries were warrant officers. There were so many of us, because we'd come from the Far East. Obviously, with their service, we'd got promotion. And yet we were taking over. And there was nothing to do. And particularly with our job, the cipher wasn't being used hardly at all. Anyway, they had to post us out somewhere, and I eventually got posted as attached to the 7th Armoured Division, and I went through to Berlin. So it was quite interesting. I saw Berlin, and the Germans, and the Russians, and everybody else. And Berlin was one long boozing session. There was a street called Kaffersendamm, which was the sort of West End, and there was Russians and Americans and French troops, and they were sloshed the whole of the time because there was absolutely nothing to do. We enjoyed ourselves in Berlin. We commandeered a yacht club and we took over the yachts from the Germans. We used to go out, do a bit of sailing, and I stayed in Berlin from, I suppose, I went there about August time and left in November, and then I went out to I was given a job with a liaison section with the Polish Armoured Division on the Dortmund Ems Canal, and we were in charge of ciphers for this little unit, and it was most odd. The Polish officers used to come in and click their heels and salute and say they wanted some more ciphers, and I was there to knock them out. But it was really quite futile. I suppose they didn't want us on the labour market. But I virtually, the whole time I spent in Germany, we had to man the office. But there were so many of us, because what happened was that the ATS, the women's services, were doing the job, you see, and when we came to take over, and of course, we were sort of, I was senior to the ATS sergeant, but they were doing the job, and it was quite ridiculous. We were sort of doubling up all round, but I think it was a political thing to sort of keep us away, you know, from the, off the labour market. And of course it was all talk of when are we going to get out, when are we going to get out. And eventually we were demobbed on what we call age groups, you know, so so it was all talk of demobilisation and what we were going to do and what sort of, you know, what their thoughts were. And a very strange thing happened, really, because I was in the sergeant's mess in Berlin, and there was a chap in there, and my mother sent me out the local paper, the Woking News and Mail, and I was reading this paper, and the chap come up to me and said, "You come from Woking?" So I said, "Yes." I said, "Do you?" "Yes," he says, "worth that." I said, "Oh, no, you want to talk like that." Anyway, it turned out that he worked in Woking Post Office, and so he said, "I'm going home soon," because he was a regular soldier and sort of going out earlier than me. So I said, "Well, you're going back to your job then?" So he said, "Oh yes," he said, "saving a job for me. What are you going to do then?" I said, "Well, I'm not going back to my old job anyway. That's a start, you know. I'm going to sell chicken corn to ladies." So he said, "They're taking on ex-servicemen in the post office." So I said, "Oh, what's the job then?" I said, "Well," he said, "well, you work in the sorting office to start off with." And he said, "If you're interested," he said, "come and see me when you come home, and we'll see what's going to happen." See, so that I forgot about it then. But anyway, I was actually demobilised in April of 1946, which gave me 6 years and 1 month service. And out of that time, I'd had 5 years and 3 months overseas. So I went along, and it came inevitably, but without enthusiasm. I just was uncertain about my domestic situation. I found it very difficult to fit into family life, and I just wondered what was going to happen. But I had a bit of leave when I came out, and I did meet this fellow in Woking, and he said, "Are you interested in the post office?" And I said, "Yes, you know." And so anyway, that was fixed up, and I joined the post office, and actually I found some aspects of comradeship, because many of the ex-servicemen joined there. So I suppose, really speaking, it sort of went round full cycle, but really speaking, the whole thing was a doubtful proposition. And I think sort of my last thoughts are to the effect that obviously my story is sort of not very heroic, really. I wasn't very brave, but I tried to serve my country as best I could. I travelled much, I learned a lot, but I lost over 6 years that could have been so different. However, all this time I was grateful to have survived when so many perished, and grateful for a caring family who kept in touch as best they could. Was it all worth it? I often wonder. But the aggressors had to be stopped, and this we tried to do. So really speaking, that is the end of my story. So I resumed civilian life at the post office. I sort of got used to civilian life. I eventually married my wife, who was a colleague of mine at the post office. I have over the years still maintained contact with my friend Alan Mattingly, who at the time of my first problems with my first wife and the letters and so on was a great help to me, and we don't see each other very often, but we still in touch on the telephone. Two other links I keep up. I'm a member of the old comrades of the Queen's Royal Regiment. They have a local branch in Guildford. We have an annual dinner. It's coming up now on the 8th of May, and then on the, I think it's the first Sunday in June, we have an annual church service at Guildford Cathedral. And I've got one or two, not of my own battalion, but they are Queen's men. And once a Queen's man, you're always a Queen's man. Even though I'm also a member of the Royal Signals Association, but I don't have anything to do with them. But one other organisation that I've been a member of since 1951 is the Burma Star Association. Now, they are one of the longest lasting ex-servicemen's organisation of the war. We were all holders of the Burma Star, which was awarded for service in the Far East. And I joined in 1951, but wasn't an active member for domestic reasons until about 5 or 6 years ago, when there was a branch in Guildford, and I started going regularly, and they meet once a month on the Sunday morning in the British Legion in Guildford. And it really, it's a highlight of my months, really. They're a wonderful set. They're from all ranks and services. We're not a flag waving, bashing, boasting lot, but we're contemporaries, and there's a sort of a fellowship, and long may continue.
I second that.